adoption of committee rules under our current understanding is not necessary because this is actually a standing committee and continues to operate under its rules as a standing committee, so we won't have to deal with that in this committee. We will go to the final two audits that I don't believe we got the overviews of in the last meeting, and then we will get a discussion, do we have that, change of directors audits and some issues around that. And if we have time, we will go for the DAS response. If we don't, we will simply stop there. And then for the reviews being conducted by LFO, we will simply schedule those for the next meeting. And so that the committee members know, those that are here and those that are not here, and I do fully anticipate that Senator Winters may not be here for the, potentially for the entire short session. She's following her doctor's advice, and I think that's appropriate. And hopefully she's back here, but if she's not, it's understood. But for the other committees, this committee will not meet next week, but it will meet the week after. So the week after, from 1 to 2:30, please do not schedule anything that conflicts with that. So I will start, I will call up representatives from the Secretary of State's office for the last two audits that we didn't get the sort of high overview of, if they'll come forward. And I'm just opening a hearing for that. This is an informational meeting, actually. And did you have anything to add at this point?
No, that's just fine. Let's just.
Okay. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Sharon Blasey, and I'm an audit manager with the Oregon Audits Division, and I'd like to provide you with an overview of our 2014 audit of the Office of Emergency Management titled Rebuilding the Organization to Strengthen Oregon's Emergency Management. The objective of our audit was to determine what improvements OEM can make to its internal management practices to better help state prepare for, respond to, and recover from disaster. Our work identified key internal organizational challenges and issues for OEM to resolve in order to address the emergency needs of Oregon more effectively. Our audit found that although OEM is responsible for preparing and maintaining a statewide emergency management plan, the plan was not complete. Specifically, there was not a relief and recovery plan, and subsections of the emergency operations plan were unfinished. Also, Oregon's hazard mitigation plan had been downgraded due to grant management and monitoring issues. This led to a lowering of the amount of hazard mitigation funds that the state receives following a disaster. I would add, however, that Oregon's status has been upgraded, which increases federal funding allowance. Some stakeholders we spoke with raised concerns about OEM's leadership in emergency management. Local emergency managers and other stakeholders pointed out OEM conducted little to no state recovery planning, the need for improved communications and collaboration from OEM, and opportunities for OEM-chaired committees to be more effective. Additionally, some stakeholders stated OEM declined to participate in meetings and planning process related to mitigation and recovery. Interviews with stakeholders and employees consistently noted several internal concerns, such as poor management processes and morale and trust issues among employees. OEM had significant management turnover and position vacancy in recent years. It had three different directors and three different deputy directors within a four-year time span. And during that time, the director position was vacant for almost 2 years. OEM hired all new management between May and October 2013, which was the first time in 4 years that all management positions had been filled simultaneously. During the course of our audit, OEM also had legal issues arise. There were two unfair labor practices complaint filed, and management told us of related tort claims. In September 2013, we administered a work environment survey of non-supervisory employees to gauge OEM strengths and identify specific areas for improvement. About 90% of its staff participated. Survey questions centered on general management practices and workplace environment expectations. Employee responses were low in most categories. In over half the survey questions, less than 45% of staff agreed with the question. For example, only 25% agreed that management had set clear staff priorities and expectations. The survey identified specific shortcomings and areas for improvement related to strategic direction, teamwork and coordination, employee development, communication, and staffing and workload management. We also found OEM did not have a strategic plan. Performance measures were limited, mostly to county compliance with federal funding requirements. Policies and procedures were not current or complete, and little to no coordination of work among employees. We found little planning for addressing workload during an emergency coordination center activation and long-term recovery. Employee evaluations were not regularly conducted, and there was no training for employee professional development or employee professional development. New management, however, recognized internal challenges during our audit and started taking steps towards improvement. The Adjutant General's top priorities included strategic direction, planning, and preparing for how the state of Oregon will manage a Cascadia event. OEM management developed overarching priorities and a work plan for the division, as well as each of its three sections. It also implemented a training needs plan and had plans for developing the division's strategic direction. We made 11 recommendations to help OEM resolve its organizational issues with clear and specific expectations, improve policies and workplace practices, better communication strategies, and feedback to improve its performance. According to OEM, 8 of those recommendations have been fully implemented. The remaining 3 recommendations have been partially implemented, and management is working to fully implement them. Recognizing OEM had some rebuilding to do, we plan to do follow-up on this work and see if OEM is prepared to fulfill its responsibilities, including coordinating emergency management and planning for disasters with state and local entities. We have recently begun follow-up work with OEM, its partners, and stakeholders. Thank you. And I'd be happy to answer any questions related to the OEM audit.
Questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Wisnett.
So, thank you for your report. It's pretty serious. Or is that one of the worst you've ever done?
Members of the committee, yes, I would say we actually started out with the intent of doing an audit to see how well prepared the state is to recover from a Cascadia event, and realized that within the agency itself, they really weren't prepared, no pun intended, but they were not prepared to help the state prepare and recover. So we focused our audit instead on internal challenges.
Yes.
So I was here, I think this was 2003. When did you?
2014. Correct.
Because before that, we went through a lot of changes between the military and civilian and where it was going to be placed and all that. And that's where you had all the changes in leadership.
That's correct. Members of the committee, that is correct. OEM was probably just 2 years before we started our audit, was placed with the military department. And I would add that since this audit, they have also had another change in director, and they've hired a gentleman who actually has emergency management experience. He's been there probably about 8 months now. And like I said, we are beginning to do some follow-up work that is a change from prior directors that they had in the recent years, where they didn't necessarily have a lot of emergency management experience. They were military, former military.
Or active, or military.
Correct.
Yeah. Thank you.
Correct.
Probably just another commentary. The audit findings would be troubling if it was any agency, but because it's the Office of Emergency Management, it's probably a number of times more troubling than that. Because if it was an agency out there like, give me a small, Construction Contractors Board, there might be a problem. But you would hope that the parties that are responsible for recovery during a disaster were in better status than what you found.
Correct.
So.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, I would add that, like I said, we have begun some recent follow-up work, and part of that follow-up work that we're doing is to not only interview and reassess conditions within the agency, but also local counties to gauge their reaction to what maybe has changed in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And so over the next several weeks, actually, we intend to meet with emergency managers from cities and counties and also other stakeholders to get a better sense of where we currently stand.
Okay. Any additional questions? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think this is what we're establishing this committee is what could we have done to help you enforce or do anything. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Well, I think it's actually when we find that an audit has been completed that finds major findings that have presented major issues, it's probably one for this committee should be aware of that, which I think they would always be aware, but they should actually follow up on it and see how the agency has followed up on it, and both the audit division and the actual agency for the audit. And I think in some ways keeping the light on that issue might help both entities actually with trying to resolve issues. So, anything additional? Okay. This is actually premature for this agency since you have a new director. It's only 8 months. One of the things that you've cited in other audits is the lack of planning for succession within agencies.
Correct.
It's too early to probably tell in this agency for the director, but you have an agency that's had, what did you indicate, 4 directors in 2 years?
Correct.
And did you find any evidence that there had been any planning for how that position would be replaced, whether the person had the right qualifications or not?
Co-Chair Devlin, the answer to that would be no. We did not see any strategic planning relating to workforce development within the agency. We did ask about that, but the answer is no. But it's something we certainly could follow up with as we're conducting our follow-up work. We could ask that question. That would be a very good question for us to ask, because you're correct. We do for... I would say a large percent of our performance audits, we do ask about succession planning. And that's, I think, an area we've seen. And we've actually considered trying to do a statewide audit of that. But at this point, each agency that we go to, we are asking that question.
Okay. Any additional follow-up? Seeing none. Thank you very much. I believe there is one more audit that we haven't had the overview on? Yes. Okay. Please proceed.
Again, for the record, my name is Sharon Blasey, and this audit is an overview of our 2014 Achievement Gap audit, so K through 12 achievement gaps. The purpose of our audit was to determine the extent of achievement gaps in Oregon for 8th grade minority and economically disadvantaged students, and to identify effective school practices for closing the achievement gap. Using average assessment scores, we calculated the difference between subgroups and a reference group to measure the achievement gap. Our focus was 8th grade because it had the most data available, and middle school is oftentimes where students experiencing challenges start to consider dropping out of school. Using average OAKS scores, we measured the statewide achievement gaps for the 2011 school year. We also performed a trend analysis measuring statewide and school-level achievement gaps for eight school years from 2004 to 2011. Our analysis was completed for both math and reading. Our audit found significant statewide gaps for economically disadvantaged Hispanic, Black, Native American 8th grade students in the 2011 school year in both math and reading. We also found no improvements for most statewide achievement gaps between 2004 and 2011. When analyzing achievement gaps at the school level, only one-third of schools analyzed were closing the achievement gap in at least one subject. The audit did not identify any schools that were closing all achievement gaps. What you see here is Exhibit A, and this is an example illustrating a 6-point statewide average achievement gap between economically disadvantaged and non-economically disadvantaged eighth graders in math. To help put this into context, a 5-point gap is approximately 1 year of student learning. So here we see economically disadvantaged students were about 1 year behind non-economically disadvantaged students in math. You may also note from the graph that the achievement gap remained constant over the 8 school years. Let's see. Okay. Similar to math results, when scores for reading were analyzed, economically disadvantaged 8th graders were almost a year behind non-economically disadvantaged students, and the gap remained constant over the 8 years. Achievement gaps also almost doubled when both race and economically disadvantaged status were considered together. That's what this exhibit represents. Here you can see the Oak scores for Black economically disadvantaged students showed them nearly 2 years behind in learning compared to white non-economically disadvantaged students. This gap also remained constant over time. These two graphs are just two examples of several that are contained in our audit report. Hispanic students showed slight improvement in both math and reading over time. However, economically disadvantaged students and Black students showed no improvement over time for math and reading. In addition to our achievement gap analysis, we also found that some middle schools were closing the achievement gap. We visited a few of these schools and learned of 5 key themes they attributed to their success, including creating a safe and positive school environment, communicating high expectations coupled with high support, utilizing teacher collaboration, using data-informed instruction and decision-making, and administrators who took a strong leadership role. We made several recommendations to the Department of Education on ways in which to address the achievement gap and also provide information about closing the achievement gap to schools and school districts. According to the agency, all of the recommendations that we made have been partially implemented and work continues towards their implementation. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions about this audit report as well.
Questions from the committee?
Sure. Yes. I can't find the audit. I'm looking at the wrong name and everything.
I'm sorry.
Is it 2014 Department of Education? Or I look student?
Correct. And it's number 10. So.
Pandemic. Couldn't find it. Thank you.
I did have a couple of questions. In previous examples I've seen like this, this one is not very demonstrative of the issue, because there's not that much improvement, actually, in these displays. But in other states, one of the issues I've seen is where you still retain the same level of gap, but you have a broad level of improvement. So in essence, if you broadly have improved the instructional experience of the students, you've literally raised everyone's scores, but you still have the gap. And I've seen others where actually you've closed the gap and you've improved. But I'm wondering, some of the things you mentioned that were showing differences are sort of just like common sort of knowledge in a sense. I mean, a good administrative environment, the collaboration amongst teachers, an environment where teachers have, real-time data, not data that they get after the students have left.
Right.
If you had to say how many school districts you had looked at in this regard, not a percentage, but just an idea about how many were exercising what you deemed to be good practices versus those that were not. I mean, there could be reasons for that. I mean, other than the administrative portion of it, I mean, it could be they lack the resources in some districts. But what did you see in terms of how many districts are exercising what you would call best practices in this?
Co-Chair Devlin and members of the committee, we actually only identified 39 schools that were closing the achievement gap. And again, this was for eighth grade only.
Yeah.
So of the 120 that we analyzed out of 191, and the 120 was based on the availability of data over time and a large enough population of a subgroup. So only 39. We visited about a quarter of those and found that overwhelmingly each of those schools, so we looked at the schools that were actually closing the gap versus those that weren't. We thought it would be a little too challenging to try to go to schools and ask them why they weren't closing the gap, and so we focused on those that were closing the achievement gap.
Yes, Representative Wiseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I could probably quite talk about this on. I wish I could find. I'll find it after this session, but I spoke today, and I hope to have a bill passed, House Bill 4057. You know, we spend over $250 million a year out of the state budget for children from poverty families,
mm-hmm.
and there's no accountability of that, of how that money's spent. That's actually another $1,500 per student is dedicated out of the state school fund for children from families in poverty. And so the bill I'm passing is not going to get where I want on transparency and accountability, but it's starting. It's looking to go to schools and say, what kind of programs are you spending versus you supporting to help these kids, and what are the, you know, do you recommend other schools look at them? So it's not exact, but it's a good start. But also, I know you said you started with eighth grade because that's where people start dropping out. But of course, you would agree that we've got to start giving
Certainly.
These children attention at pre-K and first and second, third grade to get the reading level, at, especially at third grade. That's where all the education seems to be directed at being sure they have the third grade reading level. So
right.
I wish, I'm not sure that I would have asked you to spend our money to look at the eighth grade versus, I think, starting with the early ones and see how it's being done. That would have been very helpful because I get a lot of kickback from school superintendents and OEA as far as, you know, the money is not dedicated. It's I keep being told it's not a spending formula. It's a allocation formula,
okay.
And the school districts do what they will with. But we're getting further and further behind. I think absenteeism, dropout, and graduation rates are definitely. You could link it to children from poverty. It's not their fault. We're trying to, with this bill, we're trying to see how many of them are offering, you know, after-school programs, summer programs, and things like that to be sure these kids, because they don't get it without the school system providing it.
I would follow up, Co-Chair Devlin, members of the committee. One of our recommendations to the Department of Ed was to actually replicate this type of analysis. They have the data. We got the data from them. They currently, on the report card, show Senator Devlin, as you pointed out, they show what percentage of students are meeting a certain level. And so, but that doesn't, like you said, like you pointed out, that doesn't reflect a gap between, different subgroups. So, but we recommended that the department actually conduct this type of analysis and report in the report card. So that's part of the recommendation, is to not just look at eighth grade, but to look at third grade or fifth grade, 11th grade, and begin reporting that. You know, for purposes of our audit, we needed to narrow down. You know, it's a lot of data. It had never been done. And so coming up with a methodology that we developed kind of in consultation with the department so that they could replicate it and show this. And to your point about identifying, students at risk and dropouts, we talk about that quite a bit in the audit report. And these best practices that these schools that we identified, you know, these aren't best practices that they're applying to just economically disadvantaged or subgroups. These are practices that they use for all of their students. And so, you know, some of these schools aren't just the Title I schools. They're you know, schools all across the state. And to your point, one of the things that we saw over and over again was when students were chronically absent, teachers, counselors, principals were going out, knocking on doors, contacting the parents, getting at the issue of absenteeism, dropout. So they were very proactively addressing those issues.
Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My special interest in the last session was loss of learning over the summer. And in addition to being dismayed about this kind of a gap, and the gap persists, I became especially alarmed by information provided by a national organization that showed that students who start behind when they're not provided with access to reading materials and support over the summer. There are some kids who have great families, and they take them to the library, or they somehow acquire books for them to have available, or they take them to activities and keep the right kind of social and educational and interesting activities going on over the summer. But those children who are not benefiting from parents who can or will support them over the summer with access to even just a book to read, that the gap actually widens, and it showed starting at an early age up through about the fifth or sixth grade, the gap continues to widen each year. And I guess even though I'm very concerned about this and dismayed, it's that other statistic that's just really making me terribly upset. It just gnaws at me what's happening because of this loss of learning over the summer, that even if you can achieve some catch-up, if you will, during the year with special attention and additional tutoring or additional supports, some of that is just wasted, and it's undermined by the lack of involvement over the summer. It disappears. The benefit disappears.
Senator Riley.
So both Representative Wisdom and Nathanson touched on what I wanted to say. I wanted to talk about out-of-school time as well, because we see that the kids who have the advantages usually have activities out of school. They're not sitting around, and their parents can afford to put them into activities like, we have park and recs districts, but they usually charge for things. Now, there's some allowance for kids who can't afford it, but not much. And so I think one of the things, and I have a bill to do this, by the way, to create a special districts for children to provide those out-of-school time programs after school and summer to help them continue learning and continuing to be active and not be on the street. And I think that's one of the problems that we have is that lack of out-of-school time programs, as has been pointed out.
If I could, Senator Devlin, members of the committee, one of the things that we looked at, part of the schools that we went to, and again, this was for during the school year, but each of these schools that we examined that were closing the achievement gap, and again, not just the achievement gap, but a higher level of learning for all students, were the after-school programs, the programs that they provided over the lunch hour. And that goes back to the best practice that we identified about a collaborative learning environment between teachers and a leader, whether it's a principal or someone from the district, to create that environment. Like you mentioned, that takes resources, but they were very creative in how they created those opportunities and those programs. So if it was at lunchtime, or if it was longer classroom time, what they did is, for example, some schools cut down on the amount of time between passage from class to class to give either another kind of a study hall area where they could provide additional learning or more time in the classroom. But each of these schools was very creative and collaborative in how they came up with those. And again, these were programs that were during the school year, but were built either around before school, during school, after school.
So. Anything additional? Seeing none. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you.
For the members here and the people in the audience, we only have about 6 minutes left. And we have managed to complete the first item that was on the agenda from the last meeting. I think the best thing to do now would be we will move the remaining items to the next agenda, but I want to actually put something on the record so that the Secretary of State Audits Division is prepared and DAS is prepared. One of the things, and you see it on the agenda here, it's asking about change in directors' audits. So we will have at least some time for that discussion. We knew it used to be a more regular practice than it is now. And just to put one on the record that has come up in one of our subcommittees of Ways and Means, we obviously had some situation that I believe DAS was able to address very thoroughly in the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. But actually, given the circumstances there, that is probably an entity that it would have been very good to have a change of directors on it. It's a relatively small entity. It's not like actually having a change of directors for DHS, which would be an unbelievable undertaking. But that's going to be one of the items for discussion next time. And then to refresh the committees, what our discussion was before, the co-chairs will pick one audit, which will be on our meeting not next week but the week after, to look in more deeply out of the seven that we have reviewed. And then we will query simultaneously all the members about the remaining six audits and what their priorities are. And we can probably only do two or three more over the course of this year. Now, there are six of us, so if there's no consistency in the six of us, that may present some dilemma, and we'll bring that back to the committee. But the items on the agenda next time will be this discussion of close of session audits, the DAS response to audits, and then you'll just get an update. Most of this work will occur after the session. Some of the three issues that legislative fiscal we will be looking at, not as audits, but more as reviewing, what would you say, Ms. McHugh?
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. They are not audits. They're not going to follow the yellow book standards, but we will be conducting reviews, and we will go through that next time about what reviews we've been asked to do and remind everybody and how we will go through that. Yeah. Having said that, you know, we also, though, intend to make sure we are coordinating with the Secretary of State so that there's no overlap or any issues there.
And finally, just to repeat what we were talking about at the beginning, please don't make any appointments that actually interfere with this meeting. I don't know if we will resolve all of our issues about rules by then, but should we not, we will not even be able to open a meeting unless we have a quorum here. So, given that, we are adjourned.
No meeting next week.
No.